It takes 20 years to make an overnight success. No other entertainer proved successful in as many fields as Eddie Cantor during the 1920s and 30s. Nicknamed Banjo Eyes and the Apostle of Pep for his endless reserves of energy and showmanship, this guy would literally jump around the stage while performing his numbers. He began his career touring in vaudeville. He was promoted to a legitimate theater with the Ziegfeld Follies. He recorded many hits for Columbia, translated that success to film in the 20s, and became the biggest radio star of the 1930s with the Chase Sanborn Hour. That's, you know, not even counting moving to TV as well. Welcome to Dead Wax 78s. I'm your host, Sean, and this is the podcast where we're going to discuss, you know, old-timey music and, you know, lost talent, things like that. Today's episode is about Eddie Cantor. Eddie Cantor, born Isidore Itzkowitz, January 31st, 1892, was an American comedian, actor, dancer, singer, songwriter, film producer, screenwriter, and author. Reports and accounts of Cantor's early life often conflict with one another. What is known is that he was born in New York City, the son of Michael Auschwitz, an amateur violinist, and his wife Meta, a young Jewish couple from Russia. It is generally accepted that he was born in 1892. Although it was reported Cantor was an orphan, his mother dying in childbirth, and his father of pneumonia, official records say otherwise. Meta died from complications of tuberculosis, July 1894, and the fate of Michael is unclear, as no death certificate exists for him, apparently. There's also a discrepancy as to his name. Both his 1957 autobiography and the New York Times obituary for Cantor listed his birth name as Isidore Itzkowitz. But articles published after the 20th century list his birth name as Edward Israel Itzkowitz. His grandmother, Esther Kantrowitz, took custody of him and referred to him as Izzy. It is thought to be that Kantrowitz was shortened to Cantor, but no birth certificate exists for him. But that's not unusual for someone born in New York in the 19th century. While working odd jobs for local merchants, Cantor began singing and juggling in the streets for money, and soon moved to talent contests early in his teens. One of his earliest paying jobs was doubling as a waiter-performer, singing for tips at Carrie Walsh's Coney Island Saloon, where young Jimmy Durante accompanied him on the piano. He made his first public appearance in vaudeville in 1907 at New York's Clinton Music Hall. In 1912, he was the only performer over the age of 20 to appear in Gus Edwards' Kids Cabaret, unfortunately in blackface. Here's part one. That's the kind of baby for me. Victor, 1917.
The folks that live next door to me have a brand new baby, and it nearly drives me wild when they rave about that child. All I ever hear her do is cry. But there's another baby, as cute as she can be, moved in today across the way at number 63, and she's made a hit with me. She's got a dog and cat, a great big picture hat, and all the boys just call her baby. She's got a dainty style, a little baby smile, the kind that makes you want to stick around a while. She's got those dreamy eyes, and every time she sighs, you forget your family. The other evening in a cabaret we spent, And when I saw the check, I thought it was the rent. But when the waiter came, she simply signed her name. That's the kind of a baby for me. She's got a dog and cat, a great big picture hat. All the boys just call her baby. She's got a bungalow down where the breeze is slow, and everything essential for a Zig Bell show. She's got those dreamy eyes, and every time she sighs, you forget your family. Last night I said my bankroll was an awful wreck. She tossed $1,000 alimony check. She said, now wait, don't speak, I get them twice a week. That's the kind of a baby for me. And don't you know that her father is retired? He doesn't have to toil. He made $1 million out of Standard Oil. And gee, she's his only child. And mama, she's awfully wild. That's the kind of a baby for me. She's got a dog and cat, a great big picture hat. All the boys just call her baby. She's got an aeroplane, a summer home in Maine, and diamonds that would set a fellow most insane. She has a classy pose, she wears classy clothes, her gowns all come from gay Paris. Last night she said, we'll go home in this limousine. Gee, I couldn't buy a pint of gasoline. A chill ran down my spine. She said, why, this car is mine. That's the kind of a baby for me.
Cantor's next step was a big one. Florenz Ziegfeld, one of the most important stage producers in America, convinced him to come back to New York and take part in his midnight frolic. The energetic Cantor even followed his nightly performances with a vaudeville show elsewhere. But after graduating to the popular Ziegfeld Follies in 1917, Cantor soon became one of the most successful actors in the country. And his recordings of That's the Kind of Baby for Me on Victor, that was from the Follies, became popular late in 1917. Cantor also appeared in the Follies of 1918 and 1919. And though Ziegfeld abruptly fired him in 1920 for his part in the strike by the Actors' Equity Association that forced the closure of Broadway theaters, Cantor proved that he didn't need the producers to stay successful. Recording for Emerson Records from 1920 to 1922, Cantor remained in the spotlight with several popular songs. He also starred in two productions by one of Ziegfeld's main rivals, the Shuberts. All this was enough for the unusually stubborn Ziegfeld to hire him back in 1923. During the rest of the Roaring Twenties, Cantor cemented his popularity, recording several hits for Columbia Records, including Part 2, here's Making Whoopee, Decca 1941.
On the outside looking in, maybe that is why I see the funny side. When I see a fallen brother take a bride, weddings make a lot of people sad. But if you're not the groom, it's not so bad. Another bride, another June, another sunny honeymoon, another season, another reason for making whoopee. A lot of shoes, a lot of rice, the groom is nervous, he answers twice. It's really killing that he's so willing to make whoopee.
picture a little love nest down where the roses cling. Picture the same sweet love nest. Think what a year can bring. He's washing dishes and baby clothes. He's so ambitious, he even sews. But don't forget, folks, that's what you get, folks, for making whoopee. Another year, or maybe less. What's this I hear? Well, can't you guess? She feels neglected, and he's suspected of making whoopee. She sits alone most every night. He doesn't phone or even write. He says he's busy, but she says, is he? He's making whoopee. He doesn't make much money, $5,000 per. Some judge who thinks he's funny says you pay six to her. He says, now judge, suppose I fail. The judge says, budge, right into jail. You'd better keep her. You'll find it's cheaper than making whoopee.
Cantor was made a millionaire from his performance, though mostly it came from whoopee, but he was nearly ruined in the stock market crash of 1929. He did recoup much of his income by writing about his experience in the book Caught Short. And in the early 30s, Cantor moved into radio and soon became one of the most popular radio stars of the decade. His movie career took off as well. Cantor signed a contract with Samuel Golden to remake Whoopee in 1930. It was the first in a line of early 30s Cantor-Goldwyn teamings, that show-stopping choreography by Busby Berkeley. But he appeared in at least one film per year throughout the decade. Cantor also supported the war effort vigorously, entertaining troops in Europe and forming the March of Dimes with President Franklin Roosevelt. He also served as president of the Screen Actors Guild and the American Federation of Radio Artists. Cantor began making phonograph records in 1917, recording both comedy songs and routines and popular songs of the day, first for Victor, then for Oleon Vocalation, Pathé, and Emerson. From 1921 to 1925, he had an exclusive contract with Columbia Records, returning to Victor for the remainder of the decade. Cantor was also a composer, with his most famous song seldom attributed to him in 1935, which along with Charles Tobias and Murray Mencher, Cantor wrote, "Merrily We Roll Along." It was adapted as the theme song for the Merry Melodies series of animated cartoons. Bugs Bunny, you know? Distributed by Warner Brothers Pictures between 1936 and 1964. Cantor himself was frequently caricatured in the Warner cartoons of the period. Here's part three, Merrily We Go Along.
Too many frowns can change a writer's disposition, as sure as clouds are dark in the dark. Yet every joy in life has been our one ambition, and that's how we intend to go on. Merrily we roll along, my hubby and me. Merrily there's no one half as happy as we. Though in wisest words might say, what do we care? For we've been so wealthy in the love that we share. Merrily we dance along while facing the sun. Merrily our slogan is, say, don't we have fun? We live in style with a smile and a song as we merrily roll along. Merrily we roll along, my honey and me. Why we get along is very easy to see. and I won't buy unless we pay for it cash. And we still enjoy the thrill of corned beef and hash. Though we often quarrel for a human, I'm sure, still we find there's nothing that a kiss cannot cure. We're for each other, how can we go wrong? As we battle, we roll along.
In addition to the book Caught Short, Cantor wrote and co-wrote at least seven other books, including booklets released by the then fledgling firm of Simon & Schuster, with Cantor's name on the cover, somewhere as told to or written with David Freeman. Customers paid a dollar and received the booklet with a penny embedded in the hardcover. They sold well, and H.L. Mencken asserted that that book did more to pull America out of the Great Depression than all the government measures combined. He also invented that title, March of Dimes, for the donation campaign of the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis, which was organized to combat polio. It was a play on the March of Time newsreels popular at the time. He began his first campaign on his radio show in January 1938, asking listeners to mail a dime to President Franklin D. Roosevelt at the time. Roosevelt was the most notable American victim of polio. Other entertainers joined in the appeal via their own shows, and the White House mailroom was deluged with, you know, 2.6 million dimes, a large sum of money at the time. Cantor also recorded a spoken introduction to the 1938 Decca recording of Alexander's Ragtime Band by Bing Crosby and Connie Lee Boswell, in which he thanks the listeners for buying the record, which supported the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis. That record hit number one on the charts, though Cantor did not even sing on it. Cantor's transition from radio to television was briefly successful. He guest hosted an NBC's Colgate Comedy Hour, but suffered a heart attack in 1952, the same year Hollywood produced the Eddie Cantor story. Another heart attack forced him into retirement, though he occasionally surfaced for guest appearances. But Cantor died in 1964 of a third heart attack. It is said that his fondest memories were of his singing waiter days with that other vaudeville legend, his old pal, Jimmy Durante. Here's part four. If You Knew Susie Like I Know Susie, Columbia, 1925.
Thank you. she's as busy as a port. If you knew Susie like I know Susie, oh, oh, what a girl. I had a mustache and trained it like a pup. She's got such hot lips, she kissed me once and burned it up. If you knew Susie like I know Susie, oh, whoa, 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 what a girl.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. This has been Dead Wax 78, and I'm your host, Sean. And you know what? I'll catch you on the flip side.